Firefighters are slowly making progress against the sprawling wildfire in and around California's Yosemite National Park. Almost 300 square miles of the area is now engulfed in a fire that can be seen from space. The blaze is devastating giant redwood trees, threatening towns and communities, and is also threatening the water supply of nearby San Francisco. It has so far burnt an area bigger, apparently, than the city of Chicago. Historian and San Franciscan John Borgonovo has just returned from the region, and he joins me now from our Cork studio. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miles. How are you?
Fires in this area are nothing new, but this one is different. This one is bigger than normal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing to understand about forest fires is it's a natural part of the ecosystem. And, you know, lightning fires, massive lightning strikes will set off forest fires all the time. The problem with this fire has been that there hasn't been a fire in that area for a long time, nearly a century. And so there's a lot more ground fuel. And so it's created big, massive walls of flame, a lot of heat, and that's killing the trees. Rather than kind of the fire rolling along on the floor of the forest, it's going from treetop to treetop. They're talking about flames being up to 100 meters high. And with that level of heat, it destroys the trees, and it's really difficult to fight.
And also you have summer temperatures as opposed to, say, for example, winter temperatures.
Yeah, so the Sierras basically don't get any rain for about 6 months of the year. And it's also been drier. You know, people talk about possible global warming and whether that's having an impact. It's been a dry summer. There's been a drought in California for a number of years. So that's also adding to the dryness, which is adding to the fuel, which is making it a lot more volatile and combustible.
Yosemite is one of the parks, one of the wonderful parks in California, famous for these huge giant redwood, these sequoia trees. Are they threatened? To what extent are they threatened?
So one thing to understand about this is when we think about Yosemite, you think about Yosemite Valley, which is where you have these big, beautiful waterfalls, and that's where all the tourists go. The fire isn't in the valley. It's part of the park. It's a huge park. It's an enormous area. The fire is about 20 miles away, moving away from the valley floor, but it still has a couple of these giant sequoia groves that are kind of in the line of march of the flames. And those are really beautiful trees. They're real natural treasures. They're some of the biggest and oldest trees in the world.
And they normally are able to survive fires of this nature, but this one seems to be, as you suggest, it seems to be different. It's just much fiercer.
Exactly. So the sequoias have really thick bark to kind of survive the fires. And also their seeds pollinate and kind of drop when they face that kind of level of heat as kind of a natural device to kind of regenerate in the face of fires. But because this fire is so hot and burning so fiercely, it's destroying the trees and it's burning through the bark. And so that's why it's basically a firestorm. And the firestorm also has its own weather system, which creates its own winds, which whips it up further, and it just makes it really difficult. And that's what you saw really last week, was a firestorm really broke out and got out of hand. But it seems to be kind of, slowly they seem to be getting a handle on it.
Now, as you said, this is not in the main tourist area of the park, but there is some tourist infrastructure in this part of Yosemite. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it myself because I've gone up there a number of times. A number of the city municipal areas in the Bay Area have their own little parks up in cabins and kind of rustic cabins and open tents in that part of the park. It's a real kind of inexpensive way to vacation in the mountains. They were mainly built in the 30s and 40s. The city of Berkeley's Camp Tuolumne just burned down last week. Camp Mather, which I go to frequently, that's in the kind of the path of the fire. That's kind of at the epicenter. And so it's unfortunate because generations of Bay Area residents have been exposed to the mountains by going to these kind of very inexpensive and accessible camps. And a number of those have been threatened, and one or two of them have actually been destroyed.
And how far is this fire away from major centers of population?
So basically the east side of the fire is going into the backcountry of the park, and that's very inaccessible, and it's only really backpack accessible or horse accessible. And then the west side is going towards a couple of the mountain communities closer to the highways, and that's kind of in what we call the gold country of California. And there's some small pockets of towns. They mainly rely on tourism. They're not very heavily populated. renovated, but they've been there a long time. They're historic little centers, and a number of those are kind of facing the flames, and the fire is creeping towards them in the west.
But despite the fire, despite the size of the fire, as you say, the tourist areas, most of the tourist areas of Yosemite Park still remain open.
Yeah, the park's still open right now, although apparently the air quality is quite poor and there's smoke kind of all in the area. Apparently as far away as Reno, which is over 100 miles away, the air is awful there. But yeah, the park is still going. It's, again, it's far enough away. It's probably about 15 or 20 miles from the what you would really envision as Yosemite Park, which is Yosemite Valley.
It's also approaching, or the fire is getting close to and is potentially affecting the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. Now, it's counterintuitive that fire could be a threat to water rather than the reverse, but this is all about San Francisco's drinking water, isn't it?
Yeah, so San Francisco has some of the best drinking water in the world. It's really high quality. It's straight snowmelt. And basically, it is piped in from this massive reservoir high up in the Sierra Mountains at about 4,500 feet, 5,000 feet, and it's piped directly to San Francisco. It provides us basically all of our drinking water and a good portion of our electric energy through kind of hydroelectric dams. And the fire has gotten right down onto that Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. And there's a lot of concern about the long-term or medium-term implications of that.
What have the authorities done to protect the San Francisco water? Have they drawn some water from the reservoir and placed it elsewhere?
Yeah, so fortunately, the way it was designed kind of magnificently. It's the water is drawn from the bottom of the reservoir, which is about 300 feet deep. So the ash that's landing on the top of it isn't being drawn into the pipes. And in addition to that, they're also basically draining the reservoir and moving the water to smaller reservoirs, kind of runoff reservoirs further down the system. So in the short term, it should be fine. But the fear is that because of these trees being destroyed, that the trees basically anchor the soil in the area around the reservoir and the watershed. And next year and the years after, you're probably going to see mudslides and just basically a lot of soil getting into the reservoir and clogging the system. So that's the medium-term concern.
You talked about the design. I want to discuss that with you just in a moment or two, because there's an Irish element to that and a major, major Irish angle to that. But I would have thought that controlled burns of elements and areas of the forest elsewhere reduce forest fires like this. Does that kind of thing, does it not happen in Yosemite?
So basically, there's been a change in forest management in the last 30 years. Up till then, basically, the National Park Service and the various levels of government that own all this public land have fought fires right when they occur. And one of the reasons for that was they were trying to save the trees because most of America's timber industry takes place on public land. What they realized is by doing that, by preventing natural fires from cycling through, that all this fuel on the ground, brush, fallen trees, fallen branches, dead trees, that if you don't allow fires to clear through that sometimes, periodically, that it builds up. And then basically when a fire does happen, you get a firestorm. And instead of moving along, as I said, along the ground of the forest, it moves from treetop to treetop and it destroys the trees. And so what you're starting to see now is they've started introducing controlled burning, where they would have controlled, planned fires to clear away that underbrush. The fire is now hitting those areas where they've had controlled burning previously. And the fire has slowed considerably as a result of that. But the kind of the epicenter and kind of the first areas of the fire, there was none of that controlled burning. They hadn't had a fire up there for about 90 years. And so that stuff was really dry and it was just crammed full of fuel for this fire.
Now, we talked about the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. Part of the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir system is something called we would call it the O'Shaughnessy Dam. I'm well aware of the fact that in the Bay Area and in Northern California, it's referred to as the O'Shaughnessy Dam. Who was Michael, and I'm going to call him O'Shaughnessy, I'm sorry about that, you can call him whatever you want. Who was he and what contribution did he make to Northern California in his life there?
So he's a really big deal in San Francisco history, and there's street named after him, and he designed a number of our real kind of famous tunnels and a lot of our streetcar system. But we know him best for this Hetch Hetchy project, which he designed and he engineered. And it's really impressive. He came from Limerick. He was educated at what was then University College Cork and University College Galway. And he came over and worked in the railways in kind of the late 1890s. And then he got involved in some railway projects. He was in the Hawaiian Islands for a while. He did some massive water moving and railway projects in San Diego. But then he became the city engineer in San Francisco. And he basically designed this water system in the 19-teens and 20s. And it was a massive undertaking. Some people think it's one of the best and most impressive engineering feats in the West in the 20th century. It basically moves this massive amount of water, 160 miles, some of it underground, some of it overground, piped generally. And it has a series of dams along the way to generate power. And it delivers this clean water all the way to San Francisco, 160 miles away. And it's a real impressive system. And people come, a lot of engineer geeks kind of go and like to come check it out. But in terms of San Francisco, he's, I call him O'Shaughnessy, he'd be a really big deal.
He's a huge deal in San Francisco and the Bay Area in general. But also the project was driven by an Irish-American politician, James Phelan. Tell me about him.
Yeah, so it's James Phelan. He was American-born. His father had come over from Wexford. His father had made a killing in the California Gold Rush selling merchandise to miners. But Phelan had inherited of that wealth, and he became a real major player in San Francisco and California history in the early 20th century. And Phelan actually purchased and donated a lot of the land needed for this project. And so Phelan basically provided the political muscle behind the project, and O'Shaughnessy basically delivered the project itself.
It was a controversial project, wasn't it? To some extent, it created, or could be said to create, or have created the U.S. environmental or ecological movement.
Yeah, the Yosemite National Park had just been recently created by Teddy Roosevelt, and or actually it was probably previously to that, but Roosevelt was involved in this. And the American environmentalist John Muir was very much opposed to the Hetch Hetchy project because the reservoir itself was in a national park. So he mobilized a lot of opposition to it, and it took about 10 years to sort out. And from the basis of that opposition, he launched the Sierra Club, which is pretty much one of the most dominant figures in American environmental history. In recent years, there's been talk about possibly reclaiming the reservoir, but you know, some people think that that area is actually a beautiful country. There's no tourists there. It's totally inaccessible. There's a great wildlife. It actually, when you compare it to nearby Yosemite Valley floor, which gets 15,000 visitors a week in the summer, it's actually environmentally, you can make an argument that it's much better in the way it is being used as this water source.
But Michael O'Shaughnessy from Limerick, perhaps not that popular with American environmentalists.
Not with everybody, yes, exactly.
John, thank you very much indeed for talking to us about the Rim Fire, the so-called Rim Fire in Yosemite National Park. John Borgonovo is a historian from University College Cork and was joining us there from our Cork studio.